sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
China economic data rebounds. U.S. jobs numbers are a stunner. Bad as good. Happy Hanukkah to all. And we are going to cover lots of road today on episode number 292 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, welcome. Andrew Horowitz here. It is the second week of December. We're coming on the last 3 weeks of the year, 2012. And it has been a very busy year. Man, it has been actually an astonishing year. Last year was busy with kind of these incredible lurches and then drops of the markets and lurches and drops in the markets. 2012 has been more of a kind of a short-term trend moves in one direction or the other. We have seen a lot of the same kind of lurching higher when markets do hit some very important technical levels. And then all of a sudden we see it kind of move back up because a lot of optimism that things are going to be better in the future. And that's good. That's good to see. But we did see some very questionable numbers last week. Of course, we'll get to the jobs number in a second. But man, did you see that plunge of the University of Michigan Confidence Index from the 80s down to the low 70s? And that really was in a big part due to the fact that we saw that the expectation for the future kind of really came down dramatically. There was some, I'll call it optimism still for the current situation, but when we look out further into what people are thinking about what's going to happen in the future, there was some, I would say, less than optimistic viewing of that, and that caused that index to drop. Now, on Friday, we saw a quite incredible situation because most analysts had expected to see about 75 or 80,000 jobs added to the payroll, and probably see the jobs unemployment rate, the official, quote-unquote, official unemployment rate, go to about 7.9%. What we saw was a print of 147,000, I believe it was, on the upside for jobs gains, and the employment rate go down to 7.7%. Now, initially, when you saw that number, I mean, really quickly, futures snapped higher by about 10 points on the S&P 500, right off the number. And then they started to kind of settle in a little bit. And there were some questions that were being raised as to actually how we got here. The same questions that we've been seeing for a long time. The question about the labor participation rate, revisions, you know, and really what is this all about? Who's hiring and where are the jobs going to be in the permanent mode versus maybe the temporary mode? So I think there was some skepticism on that when the numbers came out and they were able to be, you know, people kind of had the opportunity to really dig deep and uncover some of the inner details of the actual report. And then we saw that, well, things weren't as exciting and they started to slow down. Then markets opened and everything was kind of happy-pappy and things were good. And at 10 o'clock when we saw that number on the University of Michigan preliminary for December, things got a little bit sour. In particular, the NASDAQ, really, which has been hurting dramatically for some time, really got hurt as well. The Apple effect on the NASDAQ 100, which is about a 20% position of the NASDAQ 100, it dropped significantly because Apple was down close to about 3%. And this is a continuation of what we've been seeing, that some of the best stocks, quote-unquote, best stocks of 2012 are starting to kind of come off a little bit. And there's a lot of reasons for that. There could be possibly the pessimism about their ability to stay, maintaining their high levels of growth rate. And that's possible. The second thing is also the potential for people taking some money off the table because they want to pay the lower taxes on capital gains in 2012. If, in fact, the tax rates are changed in 2013 and beyond, particularly for capital gains, we're seeing the continuation of the what's good is now bad, and what was bad is now good trade. And I think that's very important to look at. In fact, there was an article in MarketWatch this weekend that talked about that, how, you know, this phenomenon at the end of the year, there is a view that, hey, whatever was the worst, let's say, for the last 12 months, may see a turnaround, because you do see the rotation of sectors and of stocks oftentimes happen on a, let's say, a 12-month or maybe even a 15-month rotational basis, where you saw that, if you recall, the previous year, we saw banks really out of favor and construction, home builders out of favor, et cetera, and they just turned around dramatically this year. We saw that utilities were really hot for a while, for the last, I don't know, maybe let's say 12 months prior to the beginning of this quarter, and then all of a sudden they turned around dramatically and they're the worst performer. And what that tells us is that there is the continuation of, you know, over exuberance or this, you know, overjoy and bullishness when it comes to a sector for some time, or the opposite, where we see that there is just a downright pummeling of a sector and, you know, really negative sentiment on a particular stock or sector, and then we see a turn. Now, again, you could see it with Egypt. Egypt got just absolutely obliterated over the last two weeks or so, as the whole opposition party is going against the current government, and there's been a variety of different constitutional decrees being presented, which really nobody likes because it's a kind of lose-lose for the populace. And then we saw all these protests go on, and they started to escalate in terms of violence, and the stock market dropped just dramatically. And all of a sudden, we see that now, well, the decree for the new constitution that was really going to be kind of a lose-lose for the people and the citizens of Egypt was backed off a little bit, and the government felt that maybe they should soften a little bit, whatever. And, of course, you saw a dramatic rise in the markets immediately. Again, this rotation of kind of take the worst thing and find that sweet spot, like we saw with China recently, and it's been bad, and it's been bad and battered and been bad, and nobody wants it, stay away from it. Hey, maybe it's a good opportunity. We saw that with HP, you know, Hewlett Packard, HPQ. We saw that with Dell recently. Look at Deckers, what happened there. That company looked like it was left for dead for a little while. Groupon up 23% on Friday with takeover speculation. I mean, if you look at that and look at, you know, Facebook, what happened there? There's this rotation that happens, particularly towards the end of the year, where you can possibly look for the big players looking for a short squeeze on a stock that's been oversold to a point that, you know, it's almost to a point that nobody wants it anymore. All the sellers have been exhausted. And when they find a point where they're basing out, that may be a good time to start stepping in. So I want you to kind of look at, maybe if you can, some of the worst stocks of the year and find those basing points, and then kind of just track, you don't have to invest, but just track what goes on with them over the next several months. And I will share with you that historically you've seen something very interesting, and I think you'll continue to see something like this, where there will be optimism on them, and you could build on that for some time until maybe that optimism really was misguided. Now, as far as the jobs numbers are concerned, to get back to that point, I think that when we look at the fact that the jobs numbers are getting better, the big question that a lot of people are asking is, what is the Fed going to do with this? We saw a good number. That's really good. Headline, of course, 7.7% on the unemployment rate. But what is the Fed going to do here? Is the Fed going to continue buying and just, you know, simply going out and spending money on either when Operation Twist expires, do a QE4, or are they going to do something different? Are they going to keep maybe do negative rates on deposits at the Fed, which is something I always thought they should do, because then it would be beneficial for the banks to actually go out and find other places to loan money to. Maybe get a little bit softer in their underwriting for those people that don't have problems, because as you know, if you've gone out and actually tried to get a mortgage or refinance or maybe a home equity line or a loan, you know how difficult it's been. I mean, the delays, the time, the paperwork, the approval process is obnoxious. And that is even if you're highly qualified. So if you're not qualified, forget about it. But it's causing a real problem in really kickstarting and really turning around the housing market, not the housing stocks for a moment, but the housing market in many areas. And yeah, there are pockets of places that are doing much better. Clearly, the condo market and many of the places in Florida, for example, because of Latin America money flowing in. You have the West Coast because you have a lot of the Asian money flowing in there. Clearly, in London, there's kind of like no commercial space or very little and very, very, very little residential space that's available at this point. You look at New York, of course. So there's pockets around the country in a variety of areas and in the central part of the country as well that there are it's almost a renaissance of the housing area and the housing boom has almost started all over again. But if actually we got a better underwriting standards and more liberalization in that area, and maybe not liberalization to the extent that we saw before where anybody, if you were breathing, or maybe even not breathing, just if somehow somebody came in, wheeled in or walked in, you can get a loan, you can get a mortgage. Not that. I'm not talking at that extreme. I'm talking about going back to normalized levels of underwriting that could actually benefit the housing market as one of the core areas that is adjacent to the stock market for the wealth effect of the economy. So I think that's something we need to consider. And we're going to see some things out of the Fed this week. And if you recall, I've said this before, when you look at Fed days, oftentimes into Fed days, you may see a little softness in markets. But when the Fed comes out, there is usually a spin. Now, that doesn't mean always to the positive. But usually there's anticipation going into that Fed meeting. And then out of the Fed meeting, you'll see a lot of movement in markets and then a reversal once there is some clarity as to what they're saying. Now, Bernanke has been consistent. No question about this. Whether you like him or not, whether you like what he does or not, Bernanke has been consistent. And his message is very simple. He is going to keep the pedal nailed to the floor for as long as possible in the face of an unemployment rate that's unacceptable and inflation that is not seeing any real substantive move to the upside. We've seen CPI relatively flat, whether you take the core number or the ex food and energy. We've seen the PPI, not really affected very dramatically. Again, you and I are sitting back and saying, well, the official number says this. I know I'm paying a lot more for everything. Okay, but you know what? You and I are not the ones necessarily that Bernanke is looking at. He's looking at this core CPI number and the core X, the food and energy, as the benchmark of when there is inflation. And as long as that stays the course, which we can argue if that's a smart thing to do or not, and until that really ramps higher in a dramatic fashion, he's going to keep on pushing, and he's going to the whole entire Fed is going to keep on pushing. And that means that we're going to see a consistent Fed for some time. And that is also further reasoned through the fact that the fiscal policy, i.e. the congressional budgets, the decisions that are made on the fiscal side of the equation, are not doing anything to really embolden the economy. So there you have what is really going on with the Fed. And we'll see a little bit more this week. There's some things that are coming out this week in the U.S. We're going to see some inventory numbers and manufacturing numbers. We're going to clearly hear from the Fed on Wednesday what's going on there. So we're going to get a little bit more of a glimpse into what's going on. Manufacturing has unquestionably been soft. Consumers are starting to get a little bit more disappointed with what's going on and a little bit more worried about what's happening. But then we switch over to what's happening in China. Now, we saw some really good news over the weekend. For the most part, we saw that industrial production is up. We saw that retail sales are up. We saw that the core numbers of the manufacturing and the engine of China has seemingly bottomed out last month or so. And now we're seeing it moving towards the upswing. But there's a big but here. And that is that they also saw a big move or a significant move in their inflation rate, which is something that government is very, very committed to keeping just in check, in line, and not getting out of hand, because they've had that before and it's been very difficult on the country and their overall core economics. Now, with that, you have to realize that there is a secondary point here. The secondary point is that with all the things that the government has been doing, little things here and there, they didn't come out with a major stimulus package like they did before, but they've been coming out, you know, a railroad package, homes. They've been doing some work there. They've been kind of tinkering with the reserve ratios with the banks. They've been doing all sorts of little things that are adding up. And obviously, whatever it is helping their economy kind of at least, you know, go through a bit of a trough here and basing period. Now, with that, you may have to wonder, now that they're seeing some inflation creep in, are they going to kind of really back off a little bit? Because a lot of the things that have been posted in the news and really heard on the street is all about the opportunity for additional stimulus and for further looser policies by the Chinese government in order to continue to, you know, benefit their economy. Now, that's very important. Shanghai index hit a 2009 low last week and then kind of recovered a bit. It was up about 4% on one day when they saw the numbers were a little bit better and the potential for the new government that was coming in to do some further economic stimulus in some way. And now that we see that there is a better number that was posted for industrial production and manufacturing, et cetera, but the inflation rate was higher, we have to scratch our heads and say, wait a second. If markets are running on stimulus optimism, is that going to be a painful situation for them? Is that going to be something that really slows down and reverses the course of the markets? It's kind of it's a very touchy matter, and it's very, it can't really be judged. It all depends on what the outlook of investors is moving forward. If they think that the economy can run on its own and continue to gain pace without additional stimulus, there's not a problem. But if they think the stimulus is really what is moving things and really the only thing that's been helping the economy along, then you're going to see a problem with those markets. Let me get to a few other things. I'm going to cover some news as well. You know, I mentioned that we're going to have a guest on today. I kind of misspoke, I guess, on that. Frank Herzio's on next week. I think Larry Williams is scheduled or is coming on the next week after that. And I always ask you, by the way, if you have any guests that you want to appear on the show, please do me a favor, write to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And as you know, we've done in the past, we've gotten those guests on and they've been some real good ones. Sometimes we need your help. You're the listener. We want to know what you want. So definitely get me the names of the people that you want to hear about. I want to talk about the fiscal cliff. I want to talk about some of the news in Europe and what's going on there. Also talk about some of the items that are in the news with regard to the gasoline price, et cetera. A few things I want to get to. Also, I asked this weekend on Twitter, if you follow me, it's @AndrewHorowitz. If you don't follow me, it's @AndrewHorowitz too, but I want you to make sure to follow me. Because we do post a good deal of information on Twitter. Sometimes it doesn't hit the blog. And if you are on Twitter, what you do is you're going to actually get an immediate tweet of anything we post on the blog, plus special updates as well. And you'll probably be one of the first to get the information because it goes right out there immediately. But before we do that, and I did ask for people to send in their questions, what they want to hear. So we have about three or four things I'm going to focus on. I'll mention GoToMeeting, by the way. GoToMeeting, a great service, just one of the best that is out there for communication, and particularly if you're doing things, where maybe the person just isn't sitting next to you all the time. So instead of having a meeting and hopping on a plane, what do? You push a couple of buttons, and voila, there they are. They're right there. You can see their face. You can see their desktop. You can share desktops. You can collaborate. So many things you can do with GoToMeeting. Great sponsor, great product, great service. And if you haven't tried GoToMeeting, here's your opportunity because you get 30 days free. 30 days for all the service. There's no kind of restrictions. 30 days free of GoToMeeting by simply going to GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code podcast. And what's really nice is it's so easy to use. And anybody that has had the opportunity to be part of a GoToMeeting event, meeting, or a webinar, or, you know, it's one of those things. It's not hard. There's no major downloads it's all automated. So it makes it really easy. GoToMeeting.com, click the try it free button. Two other things I want to mention to you, and then we'll get into some more of this discussion here. Number one, the Trigger Point Research commodity alerts have been really, you got to see what's going on there. It's pretty interesting. If you haven't traded commodities before, you need to get a little bit of experience under your belt, whether it's futures, and we trade things like, the Trigger Point Research sends out alerts on corn or
natural gas, on the S&P 500 futures. We've done a few already on gold, the 10-year note. So these are things that are involved in this, and you get either a text message or an email or both automatically. There's history there. But if you take a look at the performance in the last month, that model portfolio is up 10% with very little drawdown. I think we had 14 alerts in that period of time, and I think 10 of them have been successful. And some of them have happened, and most of them happened within the same trading session. I think there's only one or two of them that were overnight. And what's nice about this service, just like Trigger Point Equity Alerts, is that you get this immediately with very complete details of here's the buy price, here's the stop price, here's the target price. And those are alerted and updated on a regular basis. There's a 14-day free trial for both of those. And I might say, if number one, you haven't taken up the trial, I don't know what you're waiting for. Number two, if you're looking to do some basic trading here and find some great opportunities for stocks or commodities, I mean, we're talking about anywhere, you know, from $99 a month for a base package. Think about that for a second. That's one trade for most of these. One successful trade. And if you've been listening to the show for a while and taking some of the things that we talked about, you know, that's something that you may want to take a look at, because we've been talking about trading and investing in different styles and diversification. This is one of those ways that you can actually diversify. You may want to look at the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, where we manage the product for you, where we actually manage the portfolio for you that starts at $50,000. But let's say you don't have the $50,000. Let's say you don't have the money to invest in that. Well, here's a way where you can take a portfolio, let's say $10,000 or $15,000, and follow along with actually the alerts that we send out to you in real time, very effectively, to directly to your email or to your text. And there you have it. You have the trade on. You know exactly where you're going. You don't have to worry about, oh, do I like that name? Do I not like that name? What's the reason for this? What's the news for it? No, these are all technical, based on some very high grade and high confidence algorithms that we have built with Task Professional. And it is something I think you're doing yourself a very big disfavor if you don't at least do the trial of this. So just go to triggerpointresearch.com/free trial, triggerpointresearch.com/free trial, and get yourself a trial of this. And I encourage you, really, if nothing, try it for a few months. You know, we've really gotten great feedback from people. So I'm really pressing this very hard right now, because we're coming into the end of the year and you want to be ready for the beginning of the year next year. And this is perfect timing to do that. All right, now let's get to some Twitter questions. There were some good ones out there. And I guess the first one I thought was really interesting was by @topped_up. @toppedup, you know who you are. The question was about portfolio sizing, position sizing, and how do you actually deal with this? And this is a great question, because there's no real one answer. But I'll give you some guidelines and some things that I think that you can use. So what are we talking about here? We're talking about the idea of, okay, I have a stock ABC, or a commodity, or a bond, or whatever it may be, and I want to invest in that, and I think it's going to be a great thing, let's just say, to go long. Let's forget about the short side for a second. Let's just talk about long. You know, it doesn't really matter, but either way. So I'm going to go long this stock, and I have really good sense of the fundamentals, and I have good sense of the technicals, and I think this is really something that, after all my research, I'm going to buy that. How much do you invest? So you got a $50,000 portfolio. Let's say it's all cash right now, to make it really easy. How much do I put in that stock? Well, number one, it depends on your risk tolerance and how much you can deal with. But the question about risk tolerance is, well, how much does that stock really move? I mean, what's the volatility of that stock? What's the range of movement? Of course, it could change at any time, but what's been the historical range? Well, let's say that it's we've seen over a monthly period that the volatility is somewhere about 5% to the top and down. And so that's not a big deal. That's not a lot of volatility for a stock. So you know that you may want to take a bigger position in that. And you may want to first take, let's say, if you're going to go into a 10% position, maybe take a half position until the stock proves itself, and then you'll, you know, put the rest in once it breaks above maybe the next resistance level and be fully invested. And then that's the first one. The second thing is, well, okay, I really like the stock. Everything's the same. Same size portfolio. Everything's all the same. But you know what? The volatility on this is double. Let's say it's a 10% range per month, or 15% range per month. And let's say, for example, you have a lower risk tolerance level. Well, you may even say, for that stock, even though I'm just as committed to the stock, I may want to take a smaller position of that, maybe only 5% of my total portfolio. The third issue is, well, what's the kind of trade that you're doing here? Is it a trade that, hey, this is a recovery situation? Let's call it like an HPQ recently, right? Bottomed out, it's a recovery situation, but still it's a little bit of an unknown direction. Is it a breakout over the top of some resistance that things are really going to be, you know, looking like there's some really good things going to happen here moving forward? Is there a lot of short interest? You know, yeah, taking all that into consideration. So the first thing is it a move, a bounce of a lower point baseline, basing of a stock from a downtrend? Well, in one case, you could say there's not much more risk to the downside after all the selling pressure has been exhausted. So you may want to consider putting a bigger chunk into that, a bigger piece of that in there, if that's the play that you're making, and having a tight stop on the downside for maybe half your position. Now, on the upside, you may say, well, we're breaking out over all-time highs or at least over resistance levels here. But again, you know what? I want to be careful because a lot of times there are going to be some sellers over the top. And if we don't really break above this level and we get into a zone that's really a very thick with potential sellers and overhead resistance, maybe I'm going to start with a quarter of the position and add on to that on two different occurrences. The first occurrence would be if the stock comes down to support, well, I'm going to add another piece to it and I'm going to hold there. So now I have a 50% position of what my total holding will be. And then when we do break above again, well, I'm going to add to it again. And you could do that until you build your position up. Now, we start, let's say, another example would be if we want to have a well-diversified portfolio. We say, well, we're going to have maximum about a 5% plus or minus position in a portfolio. We'll start with about 2%. We'll look for where there's a little bit of weakness where we can buy into it, maybe because the market itself is pulling in a little bit and it's just affecting the stock. And we'll continue to do that for a while. But again, watching the downside risk for any individual company problem. And then we will hold on to that until we get to a point that it breaks down through support. And there's no exact percent for that. There's that could be, discussed about every stock. It's not 5% or 8% or, 2%. Every stock has its own level of core support and key support and key resistance in any range. So you have to kind of like use what your risk tolerance is, what the stock's risk is and volatility, the commitment to the stock, and how long you're going to hold it. How long are you going to let this thing, move around before you say, enough is enough, or till you say, I'm going to take my profits. The final thing is the discussion of how much upside is there. Let's say you have a stock that has, again, back toward 10% volatility on a monthly basis, and you have, let's say, about a 10% upside that you see. For whatever, you did all your calculations and you look at the technicals and you see about a 10% upside. Now let's look at the same situation where there's a 30% upside. Well, clearly, the one with the 30% upside, all things being equal, I would commit a larger portion of my portfolio to than the one that only has a 10% upside. You still may want to be invested in the one with the 10% upside because, it could still go further than that. But all things being equal, you should probably weight yourself to the ones that have the higher degree of potential, obviously. This may seem, baseline, but this is important to know. So you put more in the higher degree of confidence, the one that has the higher degree of potential upside, than you would in the other one. So hopefully that answers that question. Now we had another one that came in from @KChris. And this question was about quantitative easing, the idea of kicking the can down the road. And what would happen and what's going to now potentially cause or could there be a cause for worrying about hyperinflation? When does this finally happen? A little while ago, we talked about the fact that inflation was kicking up a little bit in China. We're seeing nothing really here. Europe's seeing nothing. And the other thing that I think Chris was also getting discussing here was the whole idea of that once all the holes are filled in the banks and all the holes filled in the economies and this whole situation goes on and there's still a lot of quantitative easing that goes on and very loose policy, there has to be a time in which we're going to see some ridiculous inflation hit.
Interesting. Well, when I read through this question, I start thinking, well, really, where are we getting to here? I mean, I think this is a question that ends in, so I can buy gold or silver, right? I mean, that's where the question is reading to me. So the answer to this question, in my opinion, is that right now the holes are so enormous and the economy has changed radically over the last number of years because of the amount of problems that were brought to it by all of the convergence of the housing crisis, the confidence in banks and the banking crisis, and the global slowdown, the aging population, all the things that go into that has really changed the dynamic of the economies right now. And even though we're seeing, and we have seen, a lot of commodity inflation and food price inflation, there still is this core inflation issue that's just not happening. Now, with that, there is inflation. But we're not at a hyperinflation situation yet because there is no way we can get there with the amount of people out of work, with the problems that we have in Europe. It's going to be, I think, a few years until that happens. I think, actually, before that happens, at least what I think, there should be a realization that the only way to go to increase the economic infrastructure and the strength of an economy is not just low rates. It's not just pouring money in. In fact, I've made the case very clearly over the last 6 months or 8 months that I think that rates should go higher to be a focus of the Fed in order to spur people into action. Actually say, you know what, we're not going to do this forever, so you better get off your tuchus and do something about this. So go out and get that loan. Go out and buy that product. Go out and make sure that you're, you know, going to get in ahead of the fact that all of this is not going to stay on the books forever. But they don't see it the same way. So, you know, until I'm a Fed governor or I'm the Fed chief, you know, that's just not going to happen. So I think the answer to the question is there could be hyperinflation in certain areas of the world. But right now in the U.S., Europe, and the major countries around the world, I just don't see it right now. I think it's something we need to be aware of. It's something we need to track. It's something that could happen. And I think the gold market, commodities market, the metals markets are signaling they believe that's going to happen. When you see that the GLD, for example, the gold ETF, has some of the largest holding of gold that it's ever had. It's just increasing dramatically, and gold buying has been going on, even with that recent drop. But Goldman's came out with a comment just last week how they think that the end is near from the upside of gold. So I'm not sure what that tells us, but there is some negativity that is being introduced in this area with the realization that at least they're controlling the inflation rate and they're keeping it to a point that, you know, they do understand in terms of the Fed level and the central bank level that they can't let that happen. At the same time, they can't let deflation happen. But if you were looking for hyperinflation in Japan because of all the money they poured in their markets over the last 20-something years, and you were betting on that to occur, and whatever the bet was that you were investing in was tied to that particular market with the realization that, wow, look what they're doing here. They just keep on pumping more and more money into their markets. It hasn't happened. They're continuing. They just can't get themselves out of a deflation mode. So I hope that answers that. And then a question from at Suzy T. And the question was about the direction for the S&P 500 for the rest of the year. If that isn't a loaded question, I don't know what is. The direction of the S&P, the SPY ETF at the end of the year. Well, what we've seen is that there is a hope trade that continues. The hope trade that we are going to come with some kind of agreement or a bargain or some kind of a compromise with this whole fiscal cliff thing. And if, in fact, we do, wow, things are going to be great. I mean, because really what we're seeing now is just the effects of all this. And that's just going to be temporary because we're going to get a fix. Well, I'll go back to what I said a couple of weeks ago. There is no fix for the fiscal cliff. The only real fix, hold on to your seats, we talked about this, the only fix is actually going over the cliff. The fix is to actually raise taxes and to cut back on entitlements and to roll back all the things that we did when we borrowed from the future a number of years ago because we were trying to stimulate the economy. And the fix would be to go back to where the tax rates were, to go back to where the entitlements were, and to actually cut down the deficit and to do what we can to lower the amount of debt we have outstanding. And that is the answer. But that's not going to happen because nobody wants pain now. There's this whole ridiculous idea that we should tax the top 2% and nobody else gets taxed, right? Well, why not just tax the tall? Why not just tax the beautiful? The people with straight teeth, the people that have, it's I find it to be class warfare. And while I do understand that the wealthy make up a big part of it, I mean, I ran numbers. I have numbers sitting in front of me right now. It doesn't make any sense to just tax them at a higher rate and nobody else. Am I saying that we should have a taxation for the middle class that's higher than those that are wealthy? No. But let's not be ridiculous about this and say that, you know, we're only going to tax the wealthy because, you know what, they are an economic driver. And the fact is, if you run the numbers, it doesn't make up the amount of money that we need anyway to close the problems with the budget and the debt we have. So anyway, the point is, to get back to this question now, is that until we see some kind of resolution here, which we're not going to see that's anything good, you're going to see a lot of choppy movement. When the markets move up, there's going to be sellers. When those markets moves down, there's going to be buyers. And there's a very defined range right now for the S&P. So I think that what you want to do with the S&P, if you are trading, if you're, you know, not just buying and holding for the long haul, is that you should find those levels somewhere about the 1395 on the S&P as a key level, 1425 on the top side. And in between, there's a few others, but that's a big enough range, you know, about 3% right there, 2.5%, 3%, that is going to be this bounce around range. And if nothing else, you saw what happened Friday. The markets moved up nicely and then came right back down. 1415 is another number that's a key number. So I think that the answer to the question for the end of the year, which is about 3 or 4 weeks from now, you know, the fact is that you're going to see a lot of volatility, a lot of bouncing around. And no particular direction because you're going to see a lot of rhetoric and blathering coming out of Washington on all sides of the matter. And truth be known, I don't know if they're actually going to come up with a solution by the end of the year. I just don't see it. And, you know, then you see things like, where Lagarde, who is the, you know, of the IMF, say that comprehensive U.S. fiscal deal needs for markets. I mean, you have to wonder, what's the deal? I mean, everybody's so scared of the markets. They've lost focus on what the bigger situation is here, which is all about getting the economy straight, not just focusing on what the markets think about the answer. And this is a new phenomenon, I think, over the last, I'll call it the last 5 or maybe even 10 years, maybe, that lawmakers are so concerned about what the market's perception of what they do is, that they will almost do anything that they can to try to convince the markets of something, even though the realization is that what they're doing is kind of sloppy. We saw that how many times now when it came to Europe over the last 2 years. They come up with a plan, markets are happy for a little while, then realization of what's going on kicks in, and then the markets just drop. Now, it's not the case recently, because, you know, we have this all-in mentality by the European Union and the Central Bank of Europe. But the fact is that what we're finding is that there is this kind of ridiculous focus of whether it's governments, central banks, or IMF to really kind of patronize the markets. Let's move on to some other topics here that I thought were interesting. I thought this particular story is probably one of the best deals I've ever heard. There's two of them that come out of Europe that I think were great. So Monti is planning to resign from Italy now, and Berlusconi is actually coming back and thinking about coming back and running for the leadership position in Italy. What's funny about this, what I find really funny, is that if you remember, Berlusconi left with a cloud of just hanging over his head with all sorts of scandal and all sorts of bad doings and just terrible functioning of his government, drove it into the ground. And now Monti is going to be resigning, supposedly to keep the politics out of the solution that they're trying to create there. And Berlusconi's coming back.
after, you know, all the things that went on there. Only in Europe will you see this kind of crap go on, okay? I mean, just amazing what's going on there. And then the other story that I thought was really fascinating was that Greece is buying back their bonds. They're trying to get 32 cents on the dollar for the bonds that they issued. So wait a minute, let me get this straight. They issued bonds, let's say at 100 or so, with the guarantee and the implicit guarantee of the government and the EU behind it and all that. And the bonds are worth like 32 cents now. Then they get a bailout from the EU, and they're taking that money and turning around and buying their bonds back at a severe discount. How great is that? Man, I do that all day long. I give somebody, you know, 100 bucks and then buy it back for 32, and I kept the 100 and I get to keep 70% more. It's like I made 170% of my money or something like that. Only in Europe. A couple of things on commodities I thought I'd mention. Japan suspending meat imports from Brazil. There's some mad cow disease going on there. Here we go again with that, right? Every couple of years, we get the mad cow disease. We get the Asian flu going on, you know, kind of cycles. But now we're seeing that we have this mad cow disease again that is spurring up. And now we're seeing that Japan is actually going to be stopping imports from Brazil. Now, meanwhile, of course, Japan is going to continue exporting their radioactive tuna, I'm sure, and all of the vegetables and things that they have that they swear was not going to be a problem and would see no residual impact after the Fukushima incident. But I just a little irony in that. Gasoline prices actually have dropped significantly. In the Lundberg survey, we saw that they're now down to $3.37 a gallon on average. That was kind of interesting, I thought. And we're seeing that copper is actually starting to run up higher, and its longest weekly gain in about 10 months on the good jobs number that we saw in the U.S., and the fact that there is some optimism over what's going on in China. So that was kind of interesting, I thought. Let's see, a couple of the news items here that were interesting. Apple is actually joining Google in a bid to buy the patents from Kodak. About a $500 million total cost for this. Kind of interesting that there is this kind of picking the carcass of Kodak, who obviously couldn't convert on the digital age. And we all know that Kodak has just an incredible array of and very, very highly valuable patents that are out there that, for whatever reason, they patented but didn't do a damn thing with them, which I guess serves them right. And that's now going into the sell zone, and we have that a couple of big boys trying to buy the patents from that. I think that was really interesting. And we'll see. I mean, the continuation of the saga between Google and Apple in trying to, you know, conquer all things, we'll call it technology, is going to be continuing on. Those two companies are really have a heated battle going on. Still wonder why Microsoft isn't getting in the fray with this, but it is what it is. Let's see. We also have that, let's see, a couple of things I wrote down here that I wanted to, I got a lot of pages in front of me here. Okay. Oh, yeah. Did you see that? I guess Goldman's getting a slap on the wrist for some massive amount of trading and just a gigantic trade on commodities that they weren't supposed to do. They're going to have to pay $1.5 billion on this big bet. I mean, this is why, by the way, they continue on with doing these kind of deals, these bets that are outsized, because at the end of the day, a $3 billion bet on something, and then you have to worry about regulators coming in with maybe a $1 million fine. I mean, do you know how much money you can make on that kind of a bet? And only that you just add that to your downside, and it's just incremental. It's just nothing. It's kind of minuscule. So when you look at, you know, why this goes on and this continues, is because honestly, there is just no regulation that will stop them. If they increase their potential fines and they increase the potential for them to get you know, in trouble somehow, well, maybe there'll be a stop to these kind of bets. But at this time, it's just not going to happen. So I think that, you know, it's kind of it's a big joke. The oversight of the banks and the oversight of, by the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, and it's really it's pathetic at best. At best, it's pathetic. Some of the other things that I think that we want to go over. Let's see here. I'm very disorganized today, it seems. Okay. All right. A couple of things I want to go over. When it comes to the couple reports that we put out, I want to make sure that you know about these, that we put out our fourth quarter 2012 economic commentaries available on the disciplinedinvestor.com site. Also put out a report that I think was really interesting about the differential in earnings estimates versus revenue estimates, and did some calculations to show you what the trend should be. And that's all also available through download over on the disciplinedinvestor.com. So that's two things I just want to make sure that you were aware of that were, in that. The other thing is, you realize that the earnings season is now pretty much come to a close, all but over. A couple of companies here and there may report in the next few weeks. But one of the things that you did notice in this particular earnings season was that there was a lot of negative outlook. And at the same time, there was a lot of revenues that did not really see any sequential growth. And that's something we have to really consider into the future. With or without this fiscal cliff dilemma, with or without all the benefits that we saw recently, with the potential for a better China and all, I mean, Europe is still slipping further into recession. And the UK announced last week that they're going to have a negative GDP print in the next period as well. We see the U.S., even though we saw the better jobs numbers, like I mentioned, the manufacturing has been slipping dramatically, and that is kind of going along the lines of a GDP that's going to be sinking. And again, this is without the discussion of the fiscal cliff and what happens with that. We saw the ECRI continue with their call for recession. They've been doing that for the last 8 to 10 months, so we'll see how that plays out. But you have to realize that all the things and the stars are aligning right now for a much weaker future of the U.S. because you have all these things coming into play right now. And even though the jobs numbers look better, like we talked about, many of those were in areas that may see layoffs happening. And we're seeing a lot of companies announce very significant layoffs in terms of restructuring and in terms of getting ahead of what they have found to be a very tough environment for sales and earnings. So what they're doing is they're continuing to, lay off and cut back and cut expenses and do what they can to create a much better overall net income stream for themselves by doing so. So this is kind of the pattern that we've been seeing and that is continuing on right now and into, next year. And I believe that we're going to probably see a continuation probably in the first and second quarter of 2013 of the same trends, because those don't change so quickly. This has been going on now, I would say, the last, we'll call it two quarters, is this continuation of a very sloppy market, very low GDP in the 2% range. And with that, you have to kind of step outside and look at where else companies get their money from. And it's clearly the international markets, the global world, the world, this globalization that has taken over, and that is really a benefit and can be a real negative situation as well. So when you put that all into, into a calculation or a discussion or an outlook, you have to realize that there is some softening that's going on. Now, one of the things we talked about last week was to watch the different retailers, how they react these days, right? What's going on with the different types of retailers? The high end, we talked about Vera Bradley. I mentioned that name in particular last week, and you saw that the stock after earnings dropped about 14%. I also mentioned Michael Kors. That stock actually held its own last week, didn't do much. But I thought it would do a lot worse with the Vera numbers, but it didn't. I guess maybe the Prada numbers that came out the day after, which were very good, helped to, instill some confidence there. And, obviously there's a long time until Michael Kors comes out with their earnings. So there's still some optimism that things can get better. But the Vera Bradley numbers were really, they did hit, but their outlook was miserable. Just absolutely miserable. So look at these retailers and realize that the big boxes, your JCPenney's, your Macy's, your Kohl's, those are the companies that are really questionable right now, the high end even more. But then the Walmarts, the Targets, maybe even the dollar stores, those are a little bit of a quote-unquote safer bet right now into a softening economic situation. So kind of, I think that's something that you need to consider and look at when we're looking at all of these names going into the end of the year in the first and second quarter of next year. One of the companies that we just looked at, as a matter of fact, was,
I don't know where you'd actually, you wouldn't qualify this as, I guess you put it right in the center. This is more of a company that has exposure to the younger age, the skaters and the kind of the look that's in now concept and sneakers and shoes and it's Zoomies, Z-U-M-Z. That stock has really been obliterated this year pretty well. And if you're going by the thesis that, hey, what's bad is good, what's good is bad, and there are turnaround stories, that could be one to take a look at. We took a small position in that last week. And actually, I think we also had a trigger point research alert on that as well. Now, the gun companies we've talked about before, and they had just a remarkable run-up, just a fantastic run right after the election. In particular, we're talking about Smith & Wesson and Sturm Ruger. Now, we closed our position in Sturm Ruger, and we had a nice profit in that. They came out with a special dividend. Smith & Wesson came out with earnings last week, and while the number was good, their outlook was good, actually, everything was great. Stock dropped about 9%. Well, we looked at it, and there was a great support level there. We picked up a small position on Friday of that after we sold that a couple of, I want to say a month ago or so. This is actually a nice company as well that I think will, you know, continue to do well under the current political structure and with the fact that the pending gun control is always on the horizon, and with their outlook that we have seen and with the gun sales that we've recently seen by, you know, the government's report on gun sales. This is interesting to take a look at. Now, there may be some additional downside with this because, you know, we're seeing a flush out of some of the holders that maybe there wasn't something they didn't like about this. But I got to tell you something. You know, these gun companies are very interesting to look at. Very interesting to consider, I think, right now. So what else? What else do we have to look at? So we have to look at some of the commodities. I mean, we're seeing oil kind of really droop down dramatically. That's something that looks like it's going to start to stabilize here. Oil is something that, you know, where we're seeing it right now is a very interesting place because it can kind of go either way here. But take a look at oil next week. And if we see any good number, or maybe that's a bad number, on the inventory numbers on Wednesday that comes out, I would be inclined to be longer than short of oil right now. Oil's an interesting play because, you know, if you see what we saw in China, that their production is up and all that, and they're a big consumer of oil and gas and energy and all that, that's a positive to the price of oil. And with the things heating up a bit in the Mideast, you know, that kind of goes back and forth. And any kind of worldwide concern over the Middle East or concern over, you know, the inventory of oil is a very big positive for that. And where we're seeing it bounce along right now is a very good level of support. So oil I would kind of look at as an interesting play. Natural gas, on the other hand, you know, we saw a great run-up this year, and that's one of those same stories that we saw, that it was one of the losers into the beginning of the year, then one of the big gainers for the year. It looks like it's starting to get a little bit topped out here. Warmer weather issues that have come across, maybe the production cycle in the U.S., manufacturing that's slowing down. That is an interesting play right there. There's not many places that you can invest in when it comes to natural gas for the pure play besides the futures, because UNG is just a disaster. It may play right for a little while, but then it just gets really all sorts of wonky because there's all sorts of contango going on inside of the roles when it comes to the future roles of natural gas. And you have to be very careful in the month that you're working on natural gas. Now, while natural gas also has a lot of, we'll call it, I don't want to say the word manipulation. That has a really bad connotation in my mind. But there's a lot of strange market making that goes on in that area and a very small control group who handles that. So you got to be careful. Those are short-term trades and something that you want to kind of consider, you know, kind of looking at, but not being in for too long on that because you can get really wounded pretty easily if it goes against you. All right, so Frank Curzio coming up next week. You can always ask questions on Twitter, and we'll kind of stack them up until the next week's show, at Andrew Horowitz, reminding you to definitely, without a doubt, don't run, don't stop, run, don't walk, go right to it and get your trial of Trigger Point Research equities or commodities.
And I might say, by the way, if you want us to manage your portfolio, $50,000 minimum for the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. If you like kind of some of the things that we talk about, how we talk about it, the mindset of what we say, the stocks that we talk about, the process, well, that's a great place because not only do you get to get in on what we're doing, but also you get to follow along because we have a private blog that is just for the clients of the strategy. And you get to see what's going on in your account because you own your own account. There's no commingling of funds here. You own your own account and we manage it individually, but as a group, if you will. So check that out. There's a short 12-minute video on the Disciplined Investor website. And you can go there and just click on it. And it's within the show notes as well. You can see what's going on there. And definitely take advantage of that. Especially now, it's a great time of year to get started because, you know, great things usually happen and a lot of volatility. And we like volatility, but into the new year and towards the end of the year. So if you're starting to get set up on that, it's the right time to do so. So if you've been waiting around for a good time for that, hello, now is the time. Now is the time. Go check it out. Hey, thanks for joining me. I really appreciate it. We're going to have a great year coming up. We have a great opportunity to do some great things, I think, in terms of markets. Hopefully you're learning a lot, you know, whether you've read my two books that we have out, The Disciplined Investor or The Winning Investor, you follow the blog, you listen to the podcast. There's great things and great resources here for you, and I am so looking forward for many, many more years, but if nothing, anything more than just 2013 and the end of 2012, being a service, and hopefully we can help you out with all the things that you're doing investment-wise. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented that should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.